Coming up next, This Week in Computer Hardware, AMD announces Mantle and new GPUs, getting smoke out of laptops, left-handed mice, memory speed versus Haswell performance, and more. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 236, recorded September 26, 2013. Just throw that laptop into the washing machine. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymous and unfiltered. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the offer code Twitch. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most important, most exciting, and most useful news in PC, tablet, mobile mayhem. Basically, if it's hardware, we love it. Joining me today, not Mr. Ryan Shrout from PCPro.com, but Mr. Robert Heron from Heron Fidelity, Techzilla, and HD Nation. What's up, Bubba?
Hey, Patrick. Hey, man, I'm good. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm excited. Some interesting stuff this week. We've been waiting for quite some time for a Steam box to show up. It turns out it's not a Steam box. It's a Steam machine. And AMD, holding its gatherings this week, has released news of Mantle, a new hardware-level API. What should we start with, man?
Oh, I'm kind of excited about AMD's Mantle, just for its potential, I think, for game developers.
So the idea is that it's a low-level graphics API allowing basically direct access from the application to, or direct access to the API that speeds up access from the application to the GPU. I think Anand said like 9x more draw calls per second than other APIs, essentially console-style access, or DOS, actually. I was laughing as I was emailing back and forth with Ryan before the show. Ryan said it could be really powerful if developers integrated console. Make that slightly more likely. That slightly more likely being, of course, that the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 are using AMD APUs. And it was kind of funny, you know, not a lot of information coming about the R9 GPU that was kind of dropped at the event. But essentially, Mantle, and I'm going to quote the article that Josh Walrath wrote up on PC Per, bypasses DirectX and possibly the hardware abstraction layer, and developers can program very close to the metal with very little overhead from software. This lowers memory and CPU usage, it decreases latency, and because there are fewer moving parts, AMD claims they can do 9x the draw calls with Mantle as compared to DirectX. This is a significant boost in overall efficiency. Before everyone gets too excited, we will not see a 9x improvement in overall performance with every application. A single HD 7790 running in Mantle is not going to power three 1080p monitors Knifeinity faster than an HD 7970 or GTX 780 in surround running in DirectX. Mantle shifts the bottleneck elsewhere.
That's it, though, for developers in particular, is where I'm thinking this will be the boon for them, especially when you're looking at the upcoming hardware that Valve might be targeting with their Steam Box. This could enable a way for them to actually deliver more performance, at least that if you're targeting 1080p 60 resolution, this might be a way for them to target that on lesser hardware or hardware that's just a little more efficient. And when you got one thing about this presentation that it showed me was that I didn't realize how many steps there are in terms of the commands that are being fed a graphics card, how all the steps it has to jump through before that command actually ends up as something on the screen. And literally this new Mantle system can reduce that by about, you know, 2/3. So the potential's there. And if it can expose the hardware the way they're saying, I would hope it just becomes widely adopted, because there is a chance that someone like NVIDIA could easily write similar code. I mean, all the video cards kind of do similar things. It's just they're all using slightly different languages to do it. So if they could create that unified layer, in a sense, that both could talk to, that would be you're not going to have NVIDIA developing Mantle on their own and calling it Mantle, but if they could do something similar that just doesn't totally make it a pain in the ass for developers to go ahead and use, then I think it could be pretty successful. And I think it would be in their interest, too, to help support a standard like that.
It's funny. I mean, one of the things that Josh notes in the article, performance will increase when things are not shader bound. Could see an improvement in geometry handling, i.e. higher polygon scenes. It sounds a lot more extravagant than it's probably going to end up being. In applications that require multiple shading passes, complex lighting, tessellation, deformation, we might see improvements in the single-digit percentages, perhaps as high as the low teens. Still, it is an improvement. It's interesting because part of this is based on, I guess, work that both Sony and Microsoft have been doing on consoles for quite some time. So it's interesting. You know, it's just very DOS.
That, and also, too, you think with the current library of Steam titles and making sure you can get all of them to work, or as many as you can, to work easily under Linux and other operating systems, Mantle might be a way for them to help do that further. And they're not targeting probably are in the back end, next generation games, but for current generation hardware and running the current library of games, that might just help tip the balance in terms of making a performance piece of hardware coming up with the Steam boxes that can drive the current title of games that are out there beautifully, at least as good as current PCs can do it, you know, targeting, like I said, 1080p 60 for the living room environment and what people will likely be connecting those boxes to.
In terms of additional announcements, the R9 and R7 series were announced yesterday by AMD. R9 series for gamers who demand the best, and the R7 series, the power to do it all, which is a polite way of saying, these are both awesome. AMD wants you to not be ashamed if you have to buy an R7, but essentially five products, R7 250, R7 260X, R9 270X, R9 280X, R9 290X. I loved
something loved for quote. Everyone.
Yeah, well, and from what Josh said, AMD basically said, yes, the R9 290X exists, and it has some new features that we are not going to really go over at this time.
Is it 4K?
Yeah.
4K issues? Who knows?
Well, it's essentially the breakdown. The R7 250 is 1 GB GDDR5. $89 in September, 3D Mark Fire Strike scores, and that's the only performance information they were giving, over 2,000. The R7 260X, $139, 2 gigs of GDDR5, 3D Mark Fire Strike, over 3,700. The R9 270X, $200, 2 gigabytes of memory, 5,500, over 5,500 on the 3D Mark Fire Strike. The R9 280X, $6,800 on the Fire Strike, $300, 3 gigs of GDDR5. And our most powerful GPU yet, the AMD Radeon R9 290X. And apparently it's going to cross 5 teraflops of compute performance, which compares to 4.5 teraflops for the GeForce Titan. There's a pre-order for the R9 290X Battlefield 4 edition, which includes Battlefield 4. Will be available for pre-order October 3rd. And that's all we know about the 290X right now.
I can't wait to see somebody finally get two 290Xs to see if that'll do 4K 60 in terms, or 2160p at 60 in terms of providing a the fastest 4K experience you can, anyway. And, you know, we're talking about a car yet that, for whatever reason, they're not releasing all the specs on that yet, but that'll be coming soon.
They just wanted to release enough information to slow down Titan sales.
Could be. Didn't they also just release a new update for their driver packages too? Oh, probably pulling that one out off of a other story I read recently, but they finally offered.
Go ahead.
I was going to say they have this. They have a similar driver tester tool now, which will help optimize your gameplay experience. But apparently, will do a couple of things that the current NVIDIA similar product does that it doesn't, or vice versa, I should say. So that was one thing I wanted to look up, but I'll check into that, and if I can remember it, I'll bring it up later. But
copy that. So Untoward, the chat room, says SteamOS, Steambox, what is known and what does it all mean? So three announcements from Valve this week. Announcement one was the SteamOS, essentially a dedicated version of Linux optimized as a Steam gaming platform. Announcement two came yesterday of the Steam Machines. And then a third announcement is expected on Friday. Essentially, here's what we know about the Steam Machines, aka the Steam Box. It will ship in 2014. The specs are almost entirely unknown. If you want to test one of the boxes, you can go to the Steam Machine page, get your Quest on, and try to basically enter a lottery to get access to one of the 300 machines that they're beta testing. You know, Valve says a powerful new category of living room hardware is on the horizon. Join the hardware beta now. Choose the model right for you in 2014. So essentially, my understanding is they're all running SteamOS. It's a mixed bag of hardware, basically, or I should say a grab bag of hardware. These are prototypes. So they're getting them out into the field, and there's just 300 boxes. There's a lot of Steam users. 300 boxes isn't much.
No, but that's a good first step for testing. I mean, clearly they're inching it out just to see, make sure that what they are putting out at this point will actually, you know, turn on, not blow up, and start probably hand selecting some of the most popular or just most prolific users of Steam currently. And if you look at the requirements for that too, it's not anybody could hit that pretty well, but it also means you're experimenting with everything from console style gaming to PC style gaming, and you're ready to go for the most part. And yeah. I need to get myself a console style controller though, which I will be picking up shortly.
Basically, you complete the steps, which includes playing a game with a gamepad in big picture mode. So basically they want you to get your living room gaming on. You need 10 Steam friends. You need a public Steam community profile. You need to agree the beta, the terms and conditions. You need to join the Steam Universe community group. And once you've done those things, if you do them before October 25th, you will be part of the pool from which they will choose the beta participants, the hardware participants. It's exciting. But yeah, basically they will have multiple Steam operating system machines to choose from in 2014. They are not moving away from Steam. They are not moving away from Windows. They are not moving away from Mac. You know, it's interesting. Oh, here it is. A small number of users, 30 or less, will be chosen based on their past community contributions and beta participation. The remainder will be chosen at random from the eligible pool. Creating multiple Steam accounts will not increase your likelihood of getting it. And basically, they are not revealing any information about the prototypes at this point. I would assume they are at least of Xbox One and PS4 quality, and above and beyond that, there is not too much information to work with.
I'll be curious to see what graphics hardware they go with on this, whether it be integrated or discrete, probably integrated. The big question is who? Are we talking Intel 4000, or are we talking AMD, or maybe a notebook style chip? Those are all the questions I have right now in terms of that. The rest of the hardware, you know, it can be pretty much, I'm not going to say anything, but there's a pretty wide selection of different hardware types you can have out there. Probably won't have an SSD in it, although that would be a nice thing to have just for performance wise. But, you know, with a relatively decent CPU, it comes down again to the graphics selection. And I'm thinking too, this again kind of leads me back to Mantle, and will it have perhaps one of the newer integrated parts you can get from AMD in order to take advantage of their performance possibilities with the new Mantle package for the developers. So, and it's also how you're going to do some conversion and carry over some of the titles in the library, in the Steam library, and get them to work on different platforms when they weren't written specifically for that anyway. So that kind of translation programming hopefully will help.
We wait with bated breath. NVIDIA mends open source documentation for Nouveau, writes Scott Michel up on PC Per. You know, AMD commits numerous updates to the open source driver community 3 months ago and has otherwise assisted the Linux community in the past. NVIDIA, not so helpful to the Linux community. There's sort of a legendary blow up where Linus Torvalds basically called out NVIDIA, and magically a few weeks later, NVIDIA updated the Linux drivers for the NVIDIA GPUs. And all of a sudden there was like 50% more performance available for Linux gaming or Linux 3D activity.
For a long time, too, the NVIDIA drivers, well, after that incident, the NVIDIA drivers were the easiest to deal with if you're going to do one of the Linux distributions. You usually would have an auto installer available if you wanted to use it, at least. So it made it usable, if nothing else.
Well, it's funny. So there's basically the article lists links to the list.freedesktop.org/archive/nouveau/2013, blah, 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 blah. Hi, Nouveau developers. NVIDIA is releasing public documentation on certain aspects of our GPUs with the intent to address areas that impact the out-of-box usability of NVIDIA GPUs with Nouveau. We intend to provide more documentation over time and guidance in additional areas as we are able. They've posted a document on the DCB 4.0 specifications that documents the device control block layout and the vBIOS, describes board topology, the board's display connectors. A few of us who work on NVIDIA's proprietary Linux GPU driver will pay attention to Nouveau at list.freedesktop.org and try to chime in when we can. Information if you have a specific question for NVIDIA. Quote, many from Ars Technica to our staff discussions at PC Perspective note how the change of heart aligns with the SteamOS announcement. I do not really believe these events are related, if only because I doubt NVIDIA would wait to contact developers until Valve spoke up. I would have to expect that SteamOS would not be a surprise to NVIDIA, especially after Gabe Newell discussed Maxwell virtualization all the way back at CES. So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see whether or not, because we were experimenting earlier this year, late last year, with Linux gaming on Steam. And it was painful, at least for me, in terms of driver support, getting things to run as well as we would like it. It'll be interesting to see where that one ends up. Interesting article, I thought, was up at Anantech looking at memory scaling on Haswell and basically answering the question of how much does memory speed matter when you're using the latest Intel processor. So they did DDR3 1333 to DDR3 3000, basically G-Skill, ponied up a whole big pile of memory. And it's really interesting. I'm going to tap into some of the summaries here because I really want you to, give the traffic to PCPer, give the traffic to Anantech, give the traffic to anybody we're doing articles from so that they can, pay for the time they put into these articles. But quote, while memory speed did not necessarily affect our single GPU gaming results for real world or IGP use, memory speed above these things can afford a tangible 5% difference in throughput. So avoid DDR3 1333 and DDR3 1600. Megahertz matters more than TCL unless you compare over large megahertz ratings. So it's interesting when you're kind of looking at the performance issues. As a general rule, below 2666 megahertz, the performance index provides an extremely rough guide as to which kits offer more performance than others. So it's interesting because we're looking at sort of like CAS latency performance, and there's this huge DIRT 3 minimum frames per second performance issue. It's not a huge spread, but essentially, as you spend more money for faster memory, the returns are radically different.
I kind of like how it's showing that the sweet spot's about in the middle, really.
Yeah.
Really around the 2400 megahertz mark. And, you don't need excessively slow latencies like out to 12 or beyond, or 11 or 12. But at the same point, you don't need to spend a lot extra to get something like a 7 or 8 latency, the CL rating at least. That can help save you some money, especially if you're just like focused on the most extreme version of a particular stick of RAM.
Well, especially given like the 3000 megahertz kits are extremely expensive, it's $700 for an 8 gigabyte kit. Quote, in light of daily workloads, a good DDR3 1866 C9 megahertz kit will hit the curve on the right spot to remain cost effective. And if you want to learn about what happens if you go up to like 2133, I'm going to send you over to anantech.com for that article on memory scaling on Haswell. It's always interesting because we've had discussions about how, certainly especially on Ivy Bridge, memory speed just didn't have much appreciable impact on what was going on with actual end user speed. But it's amazing to see somebody go through really, really meticulous benchmarking. You know, CPU real world, CPU compute, IGB compute, IGB gaming, single DPU gaming, tri-GPU, crossfire gaming. It's a lot of benchmarking. If you want to get your crazy benchmarking on, there's some interesting stuff here to dig through and really look how the memory latency, or excuse me, the memory speed impacts performance on benchmarks. Yeah, I thought that was kind of fun. It's kind of interesting to kind of think about memory speed again.
Because they're also narrowing it down to a very specific thing about the memory in terms of either like the megahertz rating or the latency rating. And they have some good tips, though, if you're shopping for parts in terms of what to look for, and at least set your bare minimum for, you know, the specs they're recommending. Because at least in a gaming environment, that shows you a real-world example of where that kind of performance can affect you. And how much so, depending on which way you want to go with the memory you're looking to purchase.
Yeah. APC plays Rock Paper Firefox OS. Fix bug, free device. It's interesting. Essentially, there's sort of APC, which is underneath the VIA Technologies umbrella. And they've been playing around with the idea of Android desktops. They have two new ones, the APC Paper and the APC Rock. So this is essentially Neo ITX form factor, looking at via ARM Cortex A9 800 megahertz, built-in 2D, 3D, 720p. So it's, these are not, you know, super high-performance machines. They're not going to support 1080p monitors, but micro SD storage, 4 gigs of NAND flash, and the Firefox operating system if you want to get your nerdly Firefox OS development on.
That's a perfect computer for visitors to my home. Rather than let them use my own computer, I'll have that hooked up with a monitor, and they can sit there and, you know, go to town.
720p monitor.
I haven't actually tried Firefox OS yet. I don't know my experience with that. I'd just be curious. I need to try it out. It's just yet another OS I haven't messed with at all yet, and let alone download it or try to install it and see how it goes as far as, you know, hardware support. I don't even know if it requires just a specific set of hardware or if it's got some general support for various types that you could just throw it into a box you already have. So
you're running it on Android hardware. It's interesting because the Rock is essentially sort of $79 for this ARM Cortex A9 800 megahertz box, and then the Paper has a recycled cardboard case.
It looks like a freaking book. So for that alone, the form factor is hilarious, if nothing else.
Now you've got me double checking Firefox OS, the adaptive phone, the features, the mission.
You're right about it. Previous similar hardware is running things like Android, so I'm assuming, you know, this probably has to have some optimization specific to either mobile or mobile hardware of some kind. I think I don't think you're going to be just throwing this on a spare PC. Although I could be wrong, and if I am, do tell me.
Razer has released something of joy for left-handed people throughout the world. Scott wrote this up for PCPer.com. It's a left-handed mouse.
Yay! No more of those symmetrical blobs you can just grab a hold of, like, will work left or right-handed. This one's actually made for a... Yes, there we go. Nice.
A whole bunch
of people should be happy about that.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny. Being a left-handed mouse, Razer decided it would by default switch the left and right mouse buttons. This could be changed in the drivers by first assigning a right mouse button to a left mouse button and then assigning a left mouse button to a right mouse button, not the other way around. Well, they don't want you to accidentally lose the left mouse button because you click through really quickly.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of fun. There's some quirks in the drivers, says Scott. But if you are a left-handed gamer, there is a left-handed mouse for you from the people at Razer. And a couple of things before we take a moment to thank our sponsor today. Surface 2, Surface Pro 2 have been announced by Microsoft. Pre-orders are starting now, shipping October 22nd. And in case you've forgotten what Surface was, it's Microsoft's tablet. The Surface 2... and the Surface Pro 2, of course, being their full-on Windows 8.1, the Surface 2 being their RT operating system, based tablet that they did not have a lot of luck with in the last iteration.
A friend of mine this time around is at least happy that they've now incorporated dual monitor support. So with the docking station, if you want to give this a shot, it has a lot more functionality than it did before, at least on that level. And I'm hearing good things too about the new keyboard and the covers in general. So it seems like a very good polish of the previous release of hardware. So a good evolution, if nothing else. And I need to try one. That's all I'm going to say. I just need to try one.
It's like a Windows desktop, but smaller. It's good. I mean, it's interesting. Like it's a Core i5 up to 512 gigabyte SSD. You know, I'm kind of curious to see, you know, they're claiming the keyboard's been improved. I thought the original keyboard, you know, the sort of keyboard cover combination was just a nightmare. You know, or I'm just flashing back to pretty much anything I've ever touched like that. It's just being frustrating.
I'm pairing a Bluetooth device with a mobile device now, and Amazon sells a great little mini Bluetooth keyboard, and there's plenty of those out there. You have good options at least if you don't want to stick with the mobile keyboard that you bought with it, or however you want to put it. It's just at least you can get real keyboards now and without wires, which is great. So
that's a big plus. USB 3.0 and NAA two-level kickstand.
Oh, I am totally sick of the commercials, though. It's just that voice, the generic Siri voice that all ads are using now is just – it's like scraping a blackboard. I'm quickly growing tired of it. So
one of the many side benefits of cutting the cable is I don't get most of the commercials that are plaguing your soul.
I DVR like 99% of the things I look at, but you know, a new piece of hardware to catch up on the screen, and I will spend a couple of seconds looking at it at least. So,
oh my goodness. One last thing before we get out of the news section and thank today's sponsor, Kindle Fire HDX. 2.2 gigahertz quad core Snapdragon processor, what should be a really gorgeous monitor, an 8.9 version at 379, a 7-inch version at 229, apparently up to 339 pixels per inch, so a retina class display. They're claiming, Amazon's claiming 11 hours of battery life, 17 if you're only reading, 34% lighter than the previous generation. And the Kindle Fire HD, you see there on the right, essentially last year's top-of-the-line tablet has dropped in price to $139. My personal favorite thing, if you scroll down a little bit, the Kindle Fire HDX also introduces the revolutionary new Mayday button. With a single tap, an Amazon expert will appear on your Fire HDX and co-pilot you through any feature by drawing on your screen, walking you through how to do something yourself, or doing it for you. Available 24/7, 365, and it comes free with the new
Kindle. The potential for abuse is unlimited with that. That's what I'm thinking. You know what? On the HDX though, they are claiming 100% sRGB color accuracy. Perfect, actually. They say perfect 100%, and that means they're doing a good factory calibration then, because sRGB just about perfectly lays over the HDTV spec. So I'm assuming, if they're being truthful there, which I assume they are, that should provide a good video viewing experience as well, in addition to just, you know, being a brand new 8.9 inch tablet. So good, good, good.
Good, good. You know what else is good? Protecting your information, protecting your data when you travel. Our sponsor, ProXPN, wants to remind you that there is a new ProXPN app for Android in the Google Play Store that supports OpenVPN. And if you haven't heard about it, we want to make it clear, this episode of This Week in Computer Hardware brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network, allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymous and unfiltered. And we got a pretty good deal for you. We'll tell you about that in a second. ProXPN is a global VPN, a virtual private network, works with just about any internet connection, creates a secure encrypted tunnel between your device, whether it's Android or iOS or Macintosh. I guess we call that OS X or Windows, and essentially tunnels your data through the, you know, basically if someone's doing terrible things on the hotel Wi-Fi, or if you're in some weird nefarious coffee shop when you don't really know what other people are doing in there, if you use a VPN like ProXPN, okay, the NSA might be able to get to you, but anybody short of that is going to basically bounce against your virtual private network. ProXPN will work with your web browser, email, file sharing, instant messaging programs. Keeps your information, your data, your secrets online hidden from prying eyes. Can disguise your physical location and give you unfettered access to any website or online service, no matter where you live or travel to. Look, I get nervous using hotel Wi-Fi or hotel network simply because I know that it exposes my machine and my information on the web to pretty much anybody inside the hotel network. ProXPN is going to protect you with a 512-bit encryption tunnel. You can choose OpenVPN or PPTP. You can basically hide what you're doing from your ISP if you're afraid of the six strikes rule. You can keep your personal internet usage at work private if they allow you to run a VPN. You can bypass internet filtering. You can bypass blocked websites. You can bypass geographical restrictions. For example, I can't look at a lot of curling video in Canada, but using ProXPN, I might be able to do that. Or if I wanted to take a look at television that's only available in the UK by using ProXPN, it could pretend that I am actually in the UK or Canada or somewhere else or Asia and bypass geographical restrictions, essentially making your connection region free. iOS, Android devices are supported. And as we mentioned earlier, there's a new ProXPN app for Android in the Google Play Store that supports OpenVPN. It's Steve Gibson, who I've known for years. I should be able to say the man's name, gave it a great review on Security Now. And Steve is more paranoid than Robert or I could ever aspire to be. So if Steve says it's safe, it's worth trusting. Check it out, people. ProXPN.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year. We've got a deal for you. If you use the code TWICH, T-W-I-C-H, you'll get 20% off for the lifetime of your account. That's a big amount of savings. 20% off is a big deal. Do us a favor, support Twitch by going to proxpn.com/twit and signing up with the code TWICH. That's going to get you 20% off for the lifetime of your account. That means ProXPN can protect your data, can basically make you region free on the internet, keep you what you do away from prying eyes for just less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. That's a really good deal, people. Check it out, proxpn.com/twit, and use the offer code TWICH. And we want to thank ProXPN for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. And hopefully I'll be able to speak for the rest of the show.
Oh, yeah, you can speak. There was a couple of tongue twisters in there.
I'm afraid to look impressed at the chat room.
They're being awesome. They are awesome.
Katis in the chat room says, Robert, that new Samsung OLED that Leo got, quote, you want to be alone with that TV, unquote.
I need some quality time, I said. And by that I meant if there are any distractions when you're trying to really study a display device, you're going to miss something. And so I can't be 100% sure when you have, like I said, a couple calibrators in the room working on a set, suggesting different things and under a time-limited situation. It's just, you know, that's not a test lab environment. That's like a home calibration environment. And so it would be nice to put that under a more test lab-ish environment and put that through the ringer in terms of putting. I'd like to run some more video processing tests. Samsung's usually really good with the video processing with their own in-house built chips in terms of how they deal with different signal formats and up conversion and really one of the more capable video processors. And it'd be nice to actually just test the living crap out of that. Make sure it is doing what it's supposed to do with content like a DVD movie and a Blu-ray and everything else. In addition, it's just any excuse to spend a little bit more time with that set. That was my first experience with an OLED panel of that size, at least, ever since the XEL1 from Sony a few years back now. And
this one shouldn't turn yellow like the Sony, right?
Yeah, that was, well, hey, also give credit to Sony. At least they put something out so far ahead of its time. You know, there was nothing else like it. And it looked beautiful for that 11-inch screen in the day. It looked great on the nightstand. But and ideally, I would like to get a couple of OLED screens side by side to do a little A-B comparison. Get them both, get the LG and the Sony side by side, do some calibration, take a look what the measurements are, put some content through it, see how they handle things like dark detail. And I am assuming, based upon what I looked at with Leo's OLED TV, out of the box, it wasn't bad, but but it has the performance or the potential to be calibrated very nicely. It tuned well. And I wouldn't mind making some suggestions, too, about what they could improve in future designs or with firmware updates. I'm real peculiar about things like how good the controls actually work and how granular adjustments are. There's nothing worse than making a relatively tiny adjustment and having it make a big change on the screen. It's better to have the other way around. That's something I will say that Vizio's done really well lately. They provide a huge range of control, like, say, 0 to 512, and it's stuck in the middle at 256, and you can, and each little motion just moves the setting a little bit, and so you can get very precise in terms of what your setup is, and I like to see that in modern displays. And the one thing it's missing that I'm just freaking out, not freaking out, but it amazes me that more people haven't jumped on the auto calibration possibilities with software like Spectracal's Calman and the appropriate meters. These TVs can be, you can get through about 80% of the work in an automated fashion if the support is built into the set properly. And it might be just a matter of licensing. It just could simply be, you know, they haven't approached the right people to get the right conversation started. But who knows? That's something I will ask them if not at CES in January, but much sooner as well. And I will give credit to some friends of mine at Samsung. They were very good about providing some good calibration tips, things to look for, and things to look out for in terms of when you go about manipulating the controls for adjusting things like white balance. I couldn't ask for more than that. And they were very good. It's like, oh, by the way, don't do this. You're going to ruin the black level. It's like, okay, I'll make sure not to do that. And at the same point, on that TV, it also provides a lot of great video processing features for dealing with things like film versus video. And I want to spend some more time with that multi-view system to be able to see, I want to test it further to see what combinations of inputs can be used in a dual view setup like that, where you and a partner are both looking at completely different content on the same screen. That's one of those useful things I keep pointing out. That's like, you know what, this is coming from the 3D side of things with the glasses and everything, but it's not 3D, but it's like another use for the screen using that similar technology. Yay. Oh, there's good old Calman. There's a piece of software I stare at a lot.
Yes, you
and
do.
I absolutely love it, man. I haven't used anything better, although there are some open source products I do need to take a look at, and so I can provide adequate feedback for folks in terms of if it's something they should be checking out or not. And that gives me a great excuse to download those programs. Yep, a couple of people sitting in a dark room, staring at a screen, making sure you blink. Got to blink. That's all you got to remember to do.
So your eyes don't fall out of your face.
Seriously.
Bug Smash R, Robert Heron, what's up with the latency in game mode on Leo's OLED TV, that HDT, that Samsung TV you were just talking about?
Yeah, it's just, I don't think that was the priority when building that set. Or it almost reminds me a little bit, though, the controls of that TV and how it reacts in a gaming environment are both very plasma TV-like. It has internally quite a bit of latency, as do just about every plasma display I've ever looked at. There's a lot going on before it actually sends the signal to the pixels. And in the case of this set, it could be just simply one thing. They're either not able to optimize any further, or that was just something that this time around wasn't the priority. I could see this set really becoming the centerpiece in a lot of people's living rooms or bedrooms. And I don't know. I'm not to say it's not a bad gaming system. It's just for certain types of games, there are probably better options. And when you compare it to something like that Sony W900A that we looked at recently on HD Nation, it had a latency for gaming with game mode enabled. I believe it was 19.3 milliseconds, which is effectively less than a frame on the screen. So that's pretty close. Without a doubt. And you got to look at, without a doubt, you got to look at Master and Commander when you're looking at TVs for the fog scenes and the sound effects, although that wasn't so much of a concern with sound, but there are a few good dark detail scenes in that movie as well when they're beneath the deck of the ship with candlelight. If you watch a movie enough, and you, especially if you've watched it on a good CRT or something that gave you a real accurate representation of what the director or the film producer experienced when they were editing it, you know, they sit in front of very expensive monitors that are professionally tuned to make sure they're accurate when they're building the movies. So to just have something like that on the screen and to be able to use that as some reference material, that's always a treat too. And it's a fact it might be a movie you like. People tend to use clips of movies they like if they can find certain sequences or content that suits them well for determining either picture performance or just things like skin tones or even saturation levels. I often use that disc Samsara, which is in the same vein and same group, I believe, as the folks who did Baraka. But there are certain sequences in there that it's shot in real world situations, but it's just an amazing bit of color and beauty of the natural world. And you're like, wow, is that real? It's like, okay, make sure I've seen this on a properly calibrated set first, because you know I don't want to think that exaggerated green or that lack of red is the way it's supposed to look. You want to make sure it's as close on as it can be. So
Nathan wants to upconvert streams. He says, at Patrick Norton, Radeon 7870 versus 7950. Which one upconverts streams and other media better, Blu-ray and 3D? The reality is for basic 1080p Blu-ray performance or video playback, any GPU, including the one, I don't want to get into some of the 24 frame per second 3.2 pull down issues with some of the earlier Intel onboard graphics, but any discrete GPU is going to have more than enough power to handle any 1080p monitor out there. 4K, things get a little more exciting, but for the available 1080p monitors, no GPU is particularly going to do that much better than any of the others. The GPU performance that you can actually feel a difference is going to be in 3D video gaming.
Totally. And maybe that was the word I kept saying over and over. I can't remember now. Anyway, it was when you're talking about the graphics card itself. Video is so optimized nowadays. It is so hardware accelerated down to the metal, pretty much. That's really not a hard case anymore. And now that they've gone through that whole cycle of, as Pat mentioned too, issues within video, it's like messing up the video playback either through frame rate conversions or whatever. That's almost a thing of the past nowadays. And the only weirdness I see today is with some of the software players. I love Total Media Theater. As a good DVD or Blu-ray player. However, for DVD playback, they enable this SIM 3D mode, which is their version of up conversion and edge enhancement and things like that. And it I've never seen a single setting that just totally messes up how a DVD looks. It is so awful looking that as soon as you turn it off, you're like, oh, okay, there's the movie. And I was just like, so it's the settings within software that sometimes can be an issue too, but any graphics chip nowadays, and if it doesn't have CPU acceleration, it'll have GPU acceleration, and the playback's really not the issue anymore. And even for recording, like I have a six tuner cable card tuner, I'm able to throw down all six tuners simultaneously and have them all recording simultaneously, or say five recording and one playing back some content that I had recorded. And I'm still not stressing an i3 processor, an Intel i3 processor from a year and a half ago. So, don't worry so much about that. Focus on things like getting the box quiet, reliable, and making it very easy to control, either if you can do it through infrared or through direct command. There's some good cell phone apps out there, too, that can provide control. But the GPU and video playback, that part's pretty much been solved. As long as the picture quality is looking good to you and there's not other issues involved, like I said, settings in particular, and that can be anything from color to video processing to hardware acceleration or not.
Web7408, Patrick, Robert, what do you think of fingerprint scanners? And I'm presuming you're talking about the fingerprint scanner on the iPhone 5S. It's cool. It's been hacked. I
haven't tried it personally, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny. There's been a lot of mayhem online. The Chaos Computer Club basically proved that a lot of the existing hacks to bypass fingerprint scanners essentially involve finding a fingerprint, making a high-resolution picture of it, printing that out with lots and lots of toner, and then creating like a high ridge, gluing that onto something else, blah, blah, blah. Basically, there's the hack is like 10 years old, and the Chaos Computer Club prove that, you know, this is a really nice fingerprint scanner and it's just as hackable as everything before it. That said, you know, if you've pissed somebody off that bad, that they probably have easier ways to break into your phone or get access to your data than scanning your finger or you know, waiting around for you to put a water glass down so they can scan it.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that have to happen for that to work. I mean, yeah. A, they have to get a hold of the device. B, you have to somehow obtain the fingerprint and go through your arts and crafts class and create the damn construct to make it, you know, the fake fingerprint. And, you know, that's a lot of work. I am amused that it you can use several other parts of your body for fingerprint, quote-unquote fingerprint identification. I've seen people use their nose and other things that I won't mention, but that I find amusing. I hope now that Samsung comes back with, the Galaxy S5 and has an iris scanner for the front-facing or the rear-facing camera that's looking at you. That's one thing I'm just surprised. Is it really that bad? Because I remember a few years ago that they were able to do we were at a trade show, probably more than a few years ago now, but they had a bank demonstration where they would first profile your iris in the system. But once it was there, you could get within 5 feet of this camera and it would ID you. And that freaked me out just slightly, the fact that it could do that at distance like that, be able to scan an eye. But still, if it's possible to do it with the cameras on phones, I think that would be – and it can be proven to be made secure. Relatively, you know, there's always a way to hack something, but again, it's like, I think the biggest boon though for devices like these is to encourage better security in terms of people using something, either a stronger password. If I could use my fingerprint to duplicate a 9-character password for my Android phone, yes, I probably would do that as my lock. And because right now I don't run anything on my phone. I don't have a lock. I don't have a code on it. I find that after a few years of having the phone, I have done that unlock so many times and I never once have ever really needed it. So I've just gotten to some better security practices on my phone. Like I much as like my computer, I use a password manager on my phone. All the important stuff, I don't install and leave like logged in my banking and other crap apps. And I just tend to be a little more careful about it. And if I lose the phone, though, I have to get to a computer fairly quickly, though, because I do have a couple ways I can either – if the phone can hit the airwaves somehow, I can do a remote wipe of it and or change passwords or actually lock it if I want. And that's actually something I want to say Google just added to their Android phones this week recently. If you've done an update on your phone now, you went into Google settings and they now have, hey, you can now – we're providing a find your damn phone feature. I mean, it's a little overdue, and there are other companies that stepped up and provided that functionality, like Lookout. But still, I was like, finally, okay, so now I have two methods, hopefully, of being able to remotely torch my phone at a distance. Granted, if somebody picks it up, they could go through my email or something like that. There is some security risk, definitely, to the way I'm operating right now. But like I said, if I could do it with a biometric scan or some other way that's easy – for the regular people out there who aren't doing much or just by looking at the fingerprint smudges on the screen surface, you could probably figure out what the characters are and then figure out the order later. You know, it's that kind of thing. Right. And it also comes down to that all the rash of phone thefts lately and how that's just become an industry and being able to quickly find and disable a phone. And I don't know if it was true or not, but they showed the New York PD actually going around with flyers saying, hey, we really want you iPhone owners to upgrade to the latest 7.0 software so that you can remotely find it and wipe it. And I don't know if that was BS.
We really want your iPhone owners to stop sitting at bus stops holding your phone out.
holding that $780 product out like it's like it really is made of gold. And
Taylor Karras in the chat room says, Patrick, Robert Heron, is it worth it to buy a next-gen console or stick with a PC? Are you a PC gamer or are you a console gamer? Or are you both? You know what I mean? It's like if you're a PC gamer, you know, wait till it comes out and go to a friend's house and play the consoles and see if you like them. And if you're a console gamer, you're going to buy the console that plays all the games you want. Or
PCs
plays
are the next-gen console. Just get that out of your head right now. If it comes out on the PC, it's going to have higher resolution. It's going to have better online capabilities. And coming from a friend of mine who recently got his first gaming notebook, the ability to attach an Xbox 360-like controller to it and plug it into your TV and have just that kind of experience. And they had just, of course, discovered Steam and the big picture mode that it offers. They were in heaven as far as gaming goes. And I pretty much haven't seen them since. So, and that was one of the most hardcore console gamers I've ever met. So, and maybe it's a budgetary thing right now. But and they're not looking to buy as soon as they come out, at least the next gen consoles. But that person discovered a lot of fun with a Steam account and a notebook with decent power. It wasn't anything special. I think it had it did have a pretty nice graphics setup on it, dual chip system with Intel and AMD graphics built in. But still, it wasn't like a crazy expensive notebook, I don't think. But still, that experience watching them just light up on a console-like experience with Steam and being able to put that on a big screen TV or just use the screen of the notebook, and they're happy campers, and they discovered discovered Steam sales, which just ruin us all, by the way, in terms of, oh, there's another $5 game I can pick up and add to the library and may or may never play.
One last question before we go. Weird Ami. Patrick, is there a good way to get the smell of a smoking hotel room out of a MacBook Pro? I was there 3 days, like 3 weeks ago, and it still smells of old casino hotel smoke. Ah, the hell of traveling in Vegas. Actually, I'm going to disagree with that. first of all, you need to basically I don't want to say like, one, you need to get sort of a damp rag or, you know, some of our beloved 90% isopropyl alcohol in a microfiber cloth and wipe down all of the exterior surfaces of the notebook because the smoke smell, it's particle sticking to the surface of the laptop. But where it really sucks is basically wipe it down and see if that does it and then fire up a bunch of flash videos and see if the smoke smell comes back. Because if the smoke smell, if you wipe it down and the smoke smell goes away, and then you fire up a bunch of flash videos and the fan kicks on in your laptop and you smell it again, that basically means all of that smoky smell from the hotel room got sucked into whatever cat hair or dirt or debris is inside of your vent system for the fan on your CPU.
Go ahead.
No, it's okay.
I was going to say, remember that JVC projector I reviewed probably about 6 months ago, or so it may have been longer, but when it arrived, I am almost certain it came straight from a Vegas trade show or somewhere. They had it in somebody's room and they were smoking cigars. That thing just perpetually put out a smell. I was like, what is that? I'm like, that's cigars. And I'm like, where's that coming from? And it's like, oh my God, it's this $5,000 projector. And it never stopped smelling. It was just, and granted, it's a giant box of plastic.
It pushes air through it. That's it. If it's a plastic box that sucks air through it, you're kind of doomed because you're going to end up having to disassemble the plastic, like wipe the surface of the plastic inside and outside, and then hope it hasn't been. I mean, it's a bad scene. Like if somebody's, if you've got some pretty nasty smoke inside of your machine,
they're mentioning ozone machines in the chat room. And that's what when I used to many moons ago when I worked in the hotel industry, if we had a hotel room destroyed by the smoking crowd, we used to put these ozone machines in there to do it. And, I don't know what the dangers or potential hazards of that are, but, I also don't remember them being very cheap either. But still, that was one thing. It did kill smells, and I'm not sure how effective that would be with or how it would even interact with electronics, though, but it should work, I'm guessing.
I don't know. Yeah, I've seen people spray orange spray sort of over to the right or left of where the intake for their fan was. The sort of natural orange spray kind of kills off stuff. It's hard. Laptops, when they get a stink in them, can be really hard to fix. But first of all, start by wiping down the entire, basically cleaning the entire exterior, wiping it down, getting the whatever sort of particles that contain the smoke smell off. And then worst case scenario, you can get your eye fixed on and replace the fan mechanism inside of the laptop. And hopefully that'll do it.
If there's some dust or something, or like you mentioned, the cat hair fuzz trapped inside, that could be where it's lodging the stink. But yeah, that's a tough one.
I like trot. Just throw the laptop in a washing machine with some OxyClean, toss it in a box of rice afterwards. Yes, that's going to be the official recommendation of Twitch this week in computer hardware. Toss that laptop in the washing machine, throw it in a bag of rice, and go buy a new laptop. That's the best way to get rid of that smoky smell. Please don't take that out of context. We gave you real answers a second ago.
No, and if you're going to try to clean out a projector, don't throw anything flammable through it while it's running. That lamp is the lamp module is extremely hot.
It will light things on fire. Ask Robert how he knows. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Robert Heron, heronfidelity.com or .org?
Do I have both? No, the .com for sure. Okay. And there's some other URLs we can't mention that also lead to that same place. But if you're lucky enough, there you go.
I don't want to know anything about that. You can. Robert joins me on Techzilla. It alternates with Veronica Belmont. We do HD Nation, basically our show about home theater and HD content and technology. And you can find those at Techzilla.com or Vision3.com/HD Nation. I cannot speak today. The braces, they are chewing on my skull. Either that or I've been up since 5 o'clock thanks to the baby. That's it for this episode of Twits This Week in Computer Hardware. Mr. Ryan Shrout will be back next week, and I expect he will get very in-depth on the new announcements from AMD, including some of the issues they plan to be solving about the frame rating problems in Crossfire in future releases, which Ryan is extremely excited about. Robert, thank you so much for making the time for us tonight.
Hey, my pleasure. Good to be with you.
Oh, man. It's fun as always, and I want to thank the chat room for being their usual highly amusing self. Oh, and mentioning Murphy's Oil Soap. Thermite smells good.
I'm glancing at the suggestions, taking note.
If you're not going to throw your laptop in the washing machine to get rid of that smoky smell, just burn a hole through the middle of it with Thermite and throw the whole flaming mess out. That's it for this episode of Twitch. I'm Patrick Morton.
And I'm Robert Heron.
We'll see you next week.